From the land-grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the July 12 edition of the Closing Market Report 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. TGM's Matt Bennett from Windsor, Illinois, will be here to look at the cash grain market. We'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast, the continuing drought conditions across the Midwest with meteorologist Pete Levitt. And then we'll hear from Lisa Braltz and this week's edition of In My Backyard. And it all happens right here on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. Visit us online at willag.org.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures did finish the day higher. The July contract for the soft red winter wheat, a closing price on the day at 8.07¾, up 24.5 cents. September there at 8.26¼, up 21¼ for the afternoon. Actually, those are yesterday's settlement prices. July wheat at 8.32¼ on the settlement today, up 24.5. September at 8.47½, up 21¼. Hard red in Kansas City finished the July at 8.21. That was 9 cents higher. And then back in Chicago for the corn pit for the afternoon, $7.74. That's right, 7.74, 23¼ cents. Since the gain, the September at 7.29½, up 25.5 cents, and December futures 7.33, up 29 cents. March contract 7.35¾, up 27.5, and the May futures finished at 2 o'clock this afternoon at 7.31 Central Time, 22 higher. That's at $7.31 for May corn. July futures at 7.27½, up 18.5, and next year's December contract $6.18, up 16.5 cents. July beans on the day just a penny and a quarter gain. At $16.24¼, the August at $15.72¼, up 0.75 cents. September at $15.47½, up 6¾, and November beans 8 cents higher at $15.30½. January futures at 15.26½, up 6¾. The May up 3½ at 14.29¾, and November of 2013, $12.96½, up 4½ cents on the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the August at 117.25¢. That's 97½ cents lower. The August feeder cattle at 141.22½, down $3, the limit lower. And July lean hogs at 97.30, $1.35 higher. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil for the day, August contract, $85.87 a barrel, 5 cents higher. Ethanol at $2.51½, up 7½, or rather 7.4 cents. And the natural gas at $2.87¼, that's up 2 1/10 of a cent. Heating oil on the day at $2.76 5/10 of a cent. 0.3 cents of a cent higher, and the gold futures at $1,564.90 an ounce, down $10.30. The U.S. dollar now trading 83.65, that's up 0.09. The CRB index at 290.30, down 0.49 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Mostly sunny skies, a high near 93 degrees on an east-southeast wind at about 5 to 9 miles an hour. And then this evening, partly cloudy, a low of 67. East-southeast winds again at 5 to 9. And then Friday during the day, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms tomorrow. And during the day tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies, a low of 69, or rather high of just 69 degrees. That cannot be right. That's not right, surely. Yeah, mostly cloudy tomorrow with a 69-degree, that's tomorrow evening with 69-degree low. Tomorrow during the day, that 30% chance of showers is there with an 87-degree high. Tomorrow night, the 30% chance of showers continues, 69 for the low. Saturday, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Should be mostly cloudy and a low high of 86. And Saturday night, the showers and thunderstorms continue at a 30% chance, mostly cloudy, and 71 degrees. Sunday, again, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny, a high of 90 degrees. And Sunday evening, partly cloudy, showers and thunderstorms finally disappear, a 73-degree low, mostly sunny on Monday at a high of 93. Monday night, partly cloudy and 74 degrees, and Tuesday, mostly sunny and 93. More on the weather when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Closing Market Report. It's a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, is waiting on the phone line this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Dan. What a wild week it's been so far. Yesterday we had a reversal down in the charts with the corn market, and then she came flying back today. Tell me about it.
Well, I think yesterday's reversal down in corn was principally one of these, you know, kind of sell the news deal. It was a good opportunity for longs to take profits. They got 8-point decline in crop rating levels, and then they got USDA to go aggressively on the downside with their 20-bushel drop off of their 166-bushel number that they put out in May. And I think a lot of traders kind of viewed that as an opportunity to take some profits. That's been a good ride. The other thing that I think contributed to it, we had increased talk about the government maybe at some point in time. I think Vilsack made a comment or two that there was no plans to change renewable fuel standards at this time. And, of course, when a politician parses his words that careful, you know he's lying, and he's probably has a committee already working on it. So I think those two factors probably came into play and tumbled the corn market probably a little more than what it should have, because there was no major fundamental change as far as a change in the weather forecast that was going to give the Corn Belt an inch and a half to 2 inches of rain. There was nothing really around to basically change the overall perception that the crop continues to decline. And as long as we're in that mode, it'll be very difficult to hold this corn market down. And in fact, it's going to go higher as long as the crop is perceived as getting smaller.
Just one note on the perception that Washington, D.C. might be willing to change the mandate. That would take some time. It would be under the purview of the United States EPA or U.S. EPA. The last time that they considered that, and you probably remember this, Dan, was when Governor Rick Perry of Texas was hoping to protect Pilgrim's Pride. And they do have to, either U.S. EPA has to come to the conclusion by on its own that economic harm is being done by the corn ethanol market, or that somebody is being, somebody makes a request and says, hey, we've got an entity that's being harmed. And even then, they have to open up a comment period. Those usually run 30 to 60 days. And so it would take some time, probably.
It would probably take some time, but you know as well as I know, Todd, if they would open up the procedures,
yeah, that'd be a bad deal.
Short crop, it would be like forecasting a 2-inch Corn Belt rain. The market would react immediately to that. Even though it would take some time, but if they were doing it and everybody realizes they were doing it because we have a crop disaster on our hands, I think the market would react immediately to it.
Given the 1.2 billion bushel carryout that is currently under the USDA's numbers now, after the WASD report earlier in the week, is there that much upside left in this marketplace? We were certainly lower than where we are now with a lower forecasted carryout last year.
Well, USDA was lucky this time around that they had some demand to trim. Since they used such a large production number in May, in order to make the balance sheet look halfway respectable, they fluffed up all the demand numbers. Mm-hmm. Those demand numbers were probably unrealistically attainable anyway. So by them having to now come back to a much smaller production, and they had to shave off some of the demand and still keep the carryover at 1.2, they had some room in there. Now, the question here is from what I am hearing from a few good sources that are walking the fields, and I was walking the field with an old fraternity brother up in Dixon, Illinois, yesterday, and there is parts of Illinois that's totally zeroed out already. I think if you get east of Bloomington on into Gibson City, you're talking to a major disaster. The lower third of Illinois is about zeroed out. The corn that I was into up in the Dixon area, I think it's got 10 days to get a rain, or you might as well, that's going to be a bust. So, and we're not talking about quarter-inch rains anymore. I mean, we got to have inch-and-a-half type stuff. And if we don't get some serious rains real quickly, I think that the yield's going to fall way under 140. And we're talking about a balance sheet that would be considered disastrous supply rationing type situation that would send corn futures sharply higher.
Yeah, on that note, I have been, of course, up to the Gibson City area. That's only 20 miles north of my home a week ago, and that looked it looked awful at that point. And I was in good corn crop in Logan County on the same day. I was at Purdue the last 3 days, traveled through towards Crawfordsville and then straight north through Wingate on 25, some really good areas, some really bad areas there. Came back through Watsika last night, and actually they look really pretty good up there. But I know that if you're a producer in the Gibson City area, or if you're in Effingham County or further south, that's really pretty rough area. And some of those are beginning to think about, and may have already started, tearing up some of that crop. Don't do it just yet, or at least don't do it until this note comes from the crop insurance folks. Don't do it until you've contacted your crop insurance person, because you have to have them come out and do a claims adjustment on it before you tear it up. Make sure you get the claims adjustment done before you go back into that field and tear it up. And I don't know what tear up means. I'm not quite certain whether you can actually you probably can, if you're in the south, you can use it for livestock feed even here. It's going to be useful in a lot of places, but make sure you get home, hold the claims adjuster first before you go through that process. Okay, Dan, one of the things I've been hearing over the last several days is, well, corn may be done on the upside in potential, and you might disagree with that, but that the soybean market will hold it up and maybe pull it higher. What's your assessment?
Well, I don't think the corn's done by itself yet. I think it's got a ways to go yet on its own. I look at the corn-soybean ratio, and basically I see this advance that corn has made some gains on beans as just a correction on that corn-soybean ratio, and that beans will get their 15 minutes worth of fame yet. I don't know exactly when that's going to take hold, but the bean crop is short too, and I think the thing that you got to look at USDA's balance sheets is that their acreage number includes about 6 million double crop acres, and I think you'll be lucky to get half of them planted, and then that half may not raise very much. So for every acre you lose in beans, you lose 40 million bushels worth of production. And USDA has already got next year's carry out at 130. So I think, for the most part, I think we're already at a negative carry out because they've got this year's carry out too high. That needs to be cut about 25 million bushels yet before it's over with. So, I look at the soybean market, and I see that thing really explosive. I think the only reason that the beans haven't exploded yet is the perception that we still have time for the weather pattern to change, and if it would change, we could maybe pull out a decent bean crop. But I think that's the only thing that's holding that back. It's kind of like the corn market. Yeah, the corn market kind of started to turn up in June, but finally come 4th of July weekend, it realized we're in deep-ass trouble, and the market took off like a rocket. My guess is that's what's going to happen on soybeans one of these days, and they're going to take off like a rocket, and we'll see, you know, what's left behind when that occurs. But, I've been in the opinion that the five-year corn cycle was up this year, and we were going to see new record highs, and I guess I still stay in that camp. I think we have a decent shot at that. We'll have to see how that plays out, and I would not rule out record highs yet in soybeans. But then a person has to fasten your seatbelt, I think, for some pretty disappointing opportunities maybe as we go on into 13, 14, 15. But at least at the moment, I think there's upside potential in all of this stuff.
All right. Thanks so much, Dan. We'll talk to you again in a week.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall, featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. More information is on their website at www.commonground.coop. And from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more, slow-cooked over a wood-fired smoker. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, Lisa Brooks learns you don't need a gas-powered vehicle to get your produce to market in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
It's the hottest day of the summer so far, and the University of Illinois' Sustainable Student Farms, Zach Grant, is peddling produce. I mean, yes, he's peddling produce to customers out on the quad at the farm's produce stand that his coworkers set up every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. But in order to get at least some of the produce there, he's also peddling it. I'd heard he'd been bringing fresh produce from the farm to the quad via bicycle and a specially designed cart for the last 6 weeks and had to investigate. It's a 3-mile ride for Zach. Leaving now, 18 minutes, he texts me. I'm wondering if the heat will slow him down, but almost exactly 18 minutes later, Zach sails onto the quad on a sturdy bike that has, hitched behind it, a produce cart resembling no produce cart I've ever seen. It's sleek and metallic and modern and not at all boxy. He alights from the bike, unhitches the trailer, and within a minute, I'm looking at something really cool called Folding Farm. Think about a food truck that sells, say, tacos. It's a similar concept, says Zach.
It's almost like the food cart or food mobile food truck concept, but with fresh produce. So you can move it anywhere and transport it easily and then deploy it and sell at a bunch of different venues other than like a traditional farmer's market.
Food carts have been around for centuries, and carts have been hauled behind bikes since bikes were invented. Zach had in mind a cart that would be towable behind a truck or a van when he started collaborating with a graduate architecture studio, Small Studio, at U of I. But he was quite enamored of the idea for Folding Farm when the students presented it to him. For starters, towing produce behind a bike means the carbon footprint of this kind of local food delivery system is greatly reduced. The farm still brings produce to the farm stand using a van, more on that in a minute, but they don't have to make a second trip, thanks to Folding Farm. Folding Farm gets major cool points, though, for being what Zach refers to again and again as being deployable. Not only can it be easily transported to any location for deliveries, it can, once at its destination, immediately unfold into its own freestanding farmer's market. It's like the Swiss Army knife of produce carts. It's also aesthetically pleasing. It might not look very rustic or farmy, but there's beauty in its simplicity, and there are some surprises. The small, fold-out display trays are made from a gorgeous wood, softening the metal and setting off the leaks they're holding. The last few weeks of Folding Farm's deployment have been its test run. How's it working out? I ask Zach.
So there are a few issues. Like, we need to get heavier-duty tires. We need to burly up the bike a little bit and reinforce it. So I'm going to be working with some other bike people in town, some engineers, to come up with a more burly bike to pull. Because the frame itself weighs 200 pounds, and with the tongue load of the hitch, we can haul up to 300 additional pounds, so the whole thing will be about a 500-pound load on the back of the bike.
Folding Farm does not stand alone. It has a partner-designed slide that fits into the back of the farm's delivery van and is used for wheeling deliveries into buildings and as a display at the farm stand. Both Slide and Folding Farm are designed around large stackable plastic bins, green ones. It might seem kind of strange to design something so cool around a humble plastic bin, but...
We use them for everything, from harvesting in the field to displaying here to delivering produce to the dining halls, and we just constantly reuse them. So I essentially wanted them to make the cart. That was the very first thing that I gave them. I was like, this is what we use for everything. Design it around this. So slide and folding farm were designed specifically around the logistics for how we harvest.
Folding farm and slide aren't the end of the collaboration between Small Studio and the Sustainable Student Farm. A wash pack pavilion designed by the studio students is currently under construction, and Zach is hopeful they'll be starting to use it to clean produce on site by late summer. While funding for projects is always an issue, Small Studio has come up with several other projects for the Sustainable Student Farm that they hope to realize as money becomes available. You can check these projects out, look at some photos of work in progress, or watch a short video about the collaboration at www.uiucsmallstudio.com. It's not every day you see true collaboration and connection, even affinity, between two totally different disciplines, but agriculture and architecture make sense together. We all need structures and design to live, and, well, everyone eats. And as it turns out, it's actually quite fun to buy people-powered produce. For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
Well, thanks, of course, to Lisa Braltz for helping to produce In My Backyard, along with your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Time to check the cash grain market on the phone line for Thursday afternoon. Should be Matt Bennett. He's at TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's start off first. I know that Effingham County is not doing well. That's to the south of you, but you're a lot closer to them than I am. What does it look like for field conditions?
Well, I would say field conditions right here in our immediate area are looking awfully rough. Any field, whether it's light or dark, dirt, you know, is in pretty bad shape for the most part. I think some of it's still trying to hold together. And, you know, I've had some people be out in fields with agronomists and think we still may have some corn that's 100 bushel and better. But I don't think that it's, the county average in Shelby, I don't think it's got any chance of coming close to 100 bushel, in my opinion.
I've heard a couple of times, and I think this might be right, anything that was planted maybe before April the 2nd and is fine or could be better. Anything that was April the 2nd through maybe the 10th or 12th went through pollination in the 100-degree heat, probably shot at this point. And then maybe you've got something later that could have a chance if it gets rainfall. Is that a good assessment?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. I think that early stuff, you know, late March, first day of April, right in there, you know, it looks pretty good for the most part. But, you know, last week, you know, the 105 temperatures for 3 days in a row just pretty much put the nail in the coffin on that stuff. And as far as the late planted corn, it's going to need a fair amount of rain here fairly soon. I mean, the temperature's backing off a little bit, you know, yet Friday and Saturday will help some, but it's not going to be quite as cool as they were forecasting. So, you know, I guess I'm not in the position to say that I think we're going to have any corn that's really that good.
Beans are just knee-high in most places. I guess they're the miracle
beans
crop.
Beans have hung in there. You know, they've hung in there. But, you know, if you go out there and do pod counts, most guys have been fairly disappointed. But yet there's a chance for rain this weekend. I think if we could get some widespread rain, I don't think there's any doubt that we can add some significant yield onto these beans. So, I mean, beans are a different ballgame than corn.
Your bids for the day?
$7.75 cash, $7.20 for fall, and then $15.92 cash beans and $15.02 for fall.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Back in just 2 minutes with the weather forecast.
The closing market report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
It's National Pecan Pie Day. Tradition holds that the French invented pecan pie soon after settling in New Orleans, after native North Americans introduced them to the nut. The first recipe for pecan pie may have been published in an 1891 issue of the Ladies' Home Journal in the column Mrs. Roar's Answers to Questions. On this day in agricultural history in 1859, William Goodale patented the paper bag manufacturing machine. Whether he was the actual inventor of the device is unknown. Two others, Margaret Knight and Francis Wolfe, could also lay claim to the invention. The paper bag was the primary way to take home groceries until the 1970s, when supermarkets switched to the much cheaper plastic bags. In 1873, it rained frogs in Kansas City. Scientific American concluded the frog downpour must have been caused by a tornado or other land-based storm. In 1861, or perhaps 1864, George Washington Carver was born. A U.S. botanist, educator, agricultural chemist, and inventor, he developed hundreds of uses for peanuts, soybeans, and sweet potatoes. He established the George Washington Carver Research Foundation for Agricultural Research. In 1884, George Eastman was born, an American inventor and industrialist. He pioneered development of rolled film and the Kodak camera, which helped promote large-scale amateur photography. And in 1920, the Panama Canal was formally dedicated. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It's a Thursday afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report. Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, is on the phone line. Pete, I see in the National Weather Service's forecast, they're calling for a 30% chance of thunderstorms and rain on, Saturday and on Friday evening and on into Sunday and then disappearing by Monday. What is your thinking on how wide that spread that might be and if it really might come through?
Okay, I think that forecast is pretty close. The probabilities are low. It'll be scattered activity. There are two funnel systems involved. Both are weak. Most of the moisture is being held south of the main front, which is down across the south, southern Mississippi Valley and up across parts of the Ohio Valley. And that's shutting the moisture off from coming up into the Midwestern states so that these fronts coming from the northwest won't be very productive, at least not the first one, which will be some scattered light stuff tonight and maybe into tomorrow morning. The best chances for activity appear to be on Saturday, when we get a secondary front, which might have a little bit more pizzazz to bring some heavier showers across the area. And again, most of the action will be Iowa, northern Illinois, northwest central Indiana, and those areas. Further south, the activity will be confined mostly south, along and south of the Ohio River from the system, the moisture in the south. However, the bad news is that as soon as this system goes by Saturday night and Sunday, drier weather returns. The models are looking for a ridging to develop once again across the central part of the country. That means hot weather, temperatures well up into the 90s for most of next week, chances of some hundreds as we get later in the week, and very little chance of significant precipitation. So we appear to be having a pattern that will give us a lick and a promise for the next day or two. Some coverage, some locally heavy showers only on Saturday. And when they're gone, they're gone. And it looks like we're back to the hot, dry spell again.
By the time we get through that hot, dry spell, I would think that the crops would be disastrous across much of the country then.
Well, I think so, certainly with the July-dependent crop, which is the corn crop. The corn is a July crop. Soybeans are in August plant, as we say, and they can be bailed out next month. But the corn crop, if it doesn't make it through pollination, there's very little that can help it except maybe improve the yield of some very small ears.
We will need the help of the rest of the northern hemisphere. Are there problems that we need to worry about then?
In the north, yes, there were some in some of the coarse grains or rice and beans in India. were suffering from severe drought so far, but they had some respite this past week and did get some showers up into north central India to bring their moisture back to near normal levels. But they're having a very slow and erratic start to the monsoon, and this is the ball game for them, is the month of July and August, and they need to get that rain, and it's minimal in the areas where we look at rice and soybeans in the north and parts of central India and south central India as well.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us.
My pleasure.
And that's Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report for a Thursday afternoon. Visit us online at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.